Hello?
Ugh.
Can you hear me? Hi, can you hear me at the back? Can you hear me at the back?
All right.
Can't tell, right? All right, I'm going to start. Where is everybody else?
Yeah, there's one.
Here's everybody else. Okay, let's start. So if some of you downloaded the slides yesterday, there's some slight changes which are to do with things I've just noticed today to do with the change in edition. Russell and Norvig, which sort of changed some of the details in some of the slides. So this is the most up-to-date version, which is also on the web page right now. Okay, so if you remember last time we started, we mentioned a notion of search strategies, which are part of this design of the agent, where you formulate, you search, and then you execute, right? So what we're going to do today is to look a bit more in depth at search strategies, and some of these strategies will be quite familiar to you, right, like depth first and all this. But we'll revisit this because today we're going to look at uninformed search, and then we're going to look at different types of searches also in the next lecture. Is it the next lecture? Yeah, I think so. Tomorrow. So today we're going to look at what's known as uninformed search strategies, right? So what happens with these ones is that they only use information in the problem definition. So really what this means is that you don't have any notions really of heuristics. Well, that's not strictly true, but you know, there isn't anything that's in sort of like explicitly coded in the algorithm, which is sort of like meta information that you may know about the problem that gets incorporated in some way to guide the search, right? So the search itself is not guided in this way using information that you may know about the problem. You know it's about a particular type of domain, or you know it's about doing a particular task, right? So then you can try and incorporate more information to it. But this is not the case for this, right? So basically, we're going to look at depth first, breadth first search. Also, we'll look at depth limited and iterative deepening. So do you all know about breadth first then? Yeah, and depth first? So can we skip these then? And oh, really? All right. I like it. And you know about this one too? Yes? Well, then no. Do you generally know about this one? If it's just one person, it doesn't count. Okay, so what is a search strategy, right? So how do we actually define it? So the interesting thing is, right, a search strategy is going to be defined by a very simple thing, right? It's going to be the order of node expansion, the order in which we pick the nodes that we're going to expand, right? So remember, we have a notion, I will say this, so there's going to be a search tree or some search graph. So there's going to be something, and you're going to decide which node you pick. And depending on this node, right, depending on the order in which the nodes are picked, that's going to give different types of strategy. And usually this is going to itself be implemented as some kind of data structure, right? And the nodes themselves are taken from this notion of the frontier, which I mentioned last time. So the frontier consists of all the nodes that are currently available for expansion, that they're all the candidates for expansion, right? So they're usually leaf nodes that are available, right? And usually we'll evaluate strategies along a number of dimensions, right? So one of this is going to be completeness, right? So remember we mentioned completeness before, right? So the idea is, does it always find a solution if one exists? So given that you all know depth first, is depth first complete? Is it? Anybody who says yes doesn't know depth first. Eh? Come on, guys. So that's one thing we're going to look at. So the notion of completeness, whether it finds a solution if it exists or not. If it does, this means it's a complete strategy. And the other thing we're going to look at briefly is like time complexity. So it's interesting, right? So time complexity is measured not really necessarily in terms of actual CPU time or real time, but in terms of some metrics such as the number of nodes that's generated, right? And then there's the space complexity, which is different, which means it's the number of nodes that needs to be kept in memory, the maximum number of nodes, right? That needs to be kept in memory at any particular point. And then there's optimality. Does it always find the least cost solution? Okay. So these are four measures that we can have, or four dimensions that we can have in terms of looking at these algorithms, at least have some comparison between them, right? And time and space complexity are going to be measured using these particular metrics there, right? So we're going to say, when you see this in the following slides, this is what each one of these means. B is the maximum branching factor of the search tree, right? So a binary tree, the branching factor is 2, right? So only 2 branches. So that's the maximum branching factor. And there's also D, which is the depth of the least cost solution. So wherever the solution is, you end up going down there, but the solution is up there, right? But that's the depth of the least cost solution. So you need this in order to express some notion of optimality, for instance. And M is the maximum depth of the state space, right? Which could be infinite if you're talking about infinite state space and you need to keep going, right? So that's the possibility there, right? So we're going to use these three values, these three measures there, right? Okay, so 4 dimensions in this case, and they're going to be expressed using these.
But if the maximum depth of the state space isn't infinite, then the first is complete, right?
No, not necessarily. So the depth, what if you have loop? The state space is not infinite if you have a loop necessarily, right? You could have 2 states and it goes from there to there. That the state space itself is finite, but the tree itself is not. Because you go to this, and then you go to that, you go to this, you go to that. So there's a difference.
But isn't it the maximum depth infinite, even though... I mean, can't the state space be finite if the maximum depth infinite?
The space can be finite and the maximum depth can be infinite.
Yeah, so as long as the maximum depth is finite.
Oh, right. So you didn't say the state space. I misunderstood you. Absolutely. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. Forget what I said. You were absolutely right. The state space can be finite, but the depth can be infinite because you could have a loop. You can have a state space with 2 states, but an infinite depth. Right. You're absolutely right. Good. Wow, you're correcting me already on the second slide. Where's this going to be? Right. So just to recall from last time, so if you remember, we sort of quickly look at the notion of tree search, right? And the thing about tree search in this case, just to recap, so you have the notion of the frontier. And what you're going to do is that you're going to look at the frontier and decide what to do next, right? If it's empty, you fail because there's nothing to expand if you didn't find a solution already, right? And choose a leaf node and remove it from the frontier. If the node contains a goal state, return the corresponding solution, you're done. Or else, expand the chosen node. This is the bit that's going to determine the search strategy, right? And adding the result to the frontier. So for instance, we do this, we expand this, we get these free, and we could decide to pick this one. But if you remember, if you pick Sibiu, which was like this town just there next to this one of the problems you could do is to go back to Arad, right? Nothing says you can't do that. And this is what's known as a repeated state. So this is a redundant path. So effectively what you have here is a loop, right? So meaning you could go there and then go there, and then basically you're back at the top of the tree again, right? So that's a problem, and we need to be able to deal with this. So tree search on its own will usually work, but it doesn't do well. Well, usually it's going to be a problem if you have repeated states, right? So then what we need is something slightly different. So just to mention this again, so the failure to detect repeated state can turn a linear problem, right, into an exponential one. So something that looks linear. So if we look at this, you know, that's just drawn and say, okay, to get from A to B, there are 2 ways, right? And to get from B to C, there are 2 ways, et cetera, et cetera. If I had to expand this as a tree, I could say, okay, here's A at the top. Well, one path leads to B, is this one, and then there are 2 ways of going to C, but it could be that from A I also go to B in this way, and there's 2 ways, right? It basically just expands in terms of what you get, right? So you end up with a big tree there for something which is effectively linear, right? So what we want is a way of detecting these loops, right, or detecting these repeated states so that we don't do this more than once. So if we actually expanded this there, and next time we try to do this, we realize, okay, we've already seen this, right? We don't want to do this again, right? So we don't want to keep going and do basically redundant work, right? So we want to avoid these loops, okay? So how do we do this? So we need to come up with a slightly different notion of search. So tree search is very good when you know there's nothing that's going to be repeated. So, but we come up with what's known as graph search. So because effectively what we have in this case is more like a graph, right? So it's not a tree. This representation is a tree. So what does it do? So what does graph search do is that it's going to augment tree search with a new data structure, right? And it's going, which is known as the explored set, right? Or sometimes called the closed list. And it's just the, basically it just remembers every expanded node. Or actually, you know, if you look at Russell and Norvig, it's slightly, you know, that's why it says, you know, it says it remembers every expanded node, but in the algorithm that it gives later on, it actually is really every expanded state, which is slightly not ambiguous. They they make the distinction between nodes and states, and then in the algorithm, they actually use state, which is a bit annoying as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, so the idea is that you keep the explored set, which is going to be the list of every expanded node, right? And then a new expanded node already in explored set is basically discarded. You just say, okay, I've seen this, it's already in there, I don't want to carry on because I've already seen it, why would I explore this? Because this is something I'm going to do anyway. I've already seen already, or whatever is going to be underneath is also going to be already seen. So you prune. So this is known as pruning sometimes. You prune the branch at this point so that you don't explore things that you've already seen, right? So how does, if we look at graph search as in pseudocode, right? So once again, you have the frontier which you initialize with the, is this clear enough? Can you see this properly? Because it was a scan from the book, which looks a bit weird. But anyway, so you initialize the frontier using the initial state of the problem, as before, right? But you also have this explored set as an additional data structure, which you just make to be empty to start with. You haven't seen anything yet, right? And then you loop, right? If the frontier is empty, you fail, as before, right? And then you choose a leaf node, as before, and you remove it from the frontier, because you're going to take it as a candidate for expansion, right? If the node contains a goal state, well, first of all, you check, you know, is this a goal state? Okay, if it is, then I'm done. I've got the solution. I can find a solution by tracing back, right? If you remember, each node is a data structure with a pointer to its parent and all this, right? And you add the node to the explored set, saying, you know, I've seen this. Otherwise, right, so you keep going. If you haven't found this, you expand the chosen node, adding the resulting nodes to the frontier. So you expand this. So in this case, you know, so, for instance, in this one, if you were there, you would expand, you would add all this. But if you're there, right, you would see this one, you would expand it, but you would only add the nodes that come underneath if they're not already been seen. So this one would be in your explored set already, so you wouldn't put this one in. So basically, you prevent yourself from seeing something you've seen already before. Right? This is what this bit does there. It says, if only if it is not in the frontier, so you want to say it's not in the frontier as well, because maybe it's a candidate for exploration, but you haven't seen it yet, it's there in the frontier, or it's something you've definitely seen before. Okay? Are you happy with this? So really, it's very similar. It's very similar to what we have here, right? Except that, you know, you've added this notion of this explored set, so you need to test about membership of this set as well, because you don't want to do the same. You don't want to revisit something you've seen already. Okay, so this is okay. Now we can move on to breadth first. And the version of breadth first that we have here is going to be basically based on graph search. So that's one reason. So before in Russell, so it's quite interesting because I was really looking at all these again. So they had a version of, if you have the second edition of Russell and Norvig, you'll see that there's a different version of breadth. Actually, they don't even give breadth first as an algorithm, clearly. So, but the version they sort of describe is more something which is based on tree search as opposed to graph search. Anyway, the version we have here is going to be based on graph search, even though I'm giving it as a tree here. It doesn't matter, right? Remember, this could be a tree. This D could be another A, right? So, okay, so the idea of breadth first is that you're going to expand the shallowest unexpanded node, right? So you're going to pick something which is the shallowest one from your frontier, right? And implementation, this is what makes a difference, right? It's what's going to choose the order in which you pick the node from the frontier. So you end up not even having to do this as something, you know, you end up implicitly doing this by deciding what data structure you're going to have here. So the frontier is implemented as a first-in, first-out queue. So it's just a queue, right? Whatever goes in first comes out first, right? So new successors go at the end. So whenever you find a new successor, you just put it at the end. So this ensures that something you've seen before is going to be, you know, you're going to explore this before anything that's new. Right, and you'll see that for depth first, you just take a life one. You just change it. So if this is A, what do you do? So this is your first node there. Well, it has two successors. So you decide, okay, we expand this, right? So we keep this. So we're going to show it like this, right? So when it's gray like this, it's in memory. It's actually in memory. So it has two successors. So what do we do next, right? So we say, okay, so these are the two. Right, so we've seen this, so these are the candidates now. In this case, we're just going to assume we go from the left, so, you know, we do B. So this is B. So B has two successors, so this becomes the, so when you do this now, at this point, this is the frontier, right, the new frontier. Now you do this, and this is the new frontier. But remember, it's going to be a first in, first out queue. So you're not going to do these ones. You're going to do C before you do these latest ones, right? So you move to this one now. So this is in memory. This is in memory. And these things are all there. So these are all open right now, right? And you do C. So you do C, you find its candidate. So now what happens is that this is the new frontier. So what do you pick? The oldest one now is D. So you pick D, right? This is assuming you're moving from left to right, right? So you could decide. So if you look at the past exam questions, sometimes, you know, just decide, assume you're expanding the tree from right to left. And you give the answer, you also give an answer from left to right, and people, because it's so natural to think you tend to go from left to right, but it doesn't matter, it could be from right to left. So, yeah, so you'll see this in some of the multiple choice questions sometimes, that just changing the order obviously is going to make it different, but it's just slightly, yeah, slightly devious. Yeah, there's only so many questions you can ask about breakfast. Okay, so are you happy with this? So last in, first out, so that's the data structure there. So what about the algorithm in pseudocode? Slightly more detailed than the one that was given for just graph search. So it takes a problem, it's going to return a solution or failure, right? So we're going to have the notion of the node as a data structure. So if you remember, the node is a data structure of a number of fields, right? Or a number of components, right? So one of it is, okay, we're going to initialize it and say we're going to start by creating a node which has the state of the, which is the initial state of the problem, right? And also it's going to be that its path cost is zero because you're starting at the top, right? You're going to assume it's zero initially. It's just an assumption here. And the thing that it does, it turns to see, you know, am I already at a goal state? Maybe it just happens that my tree is just one node, right? I'm starting and I'm finishing there. So is it a goal state? If it is, then return the solution immediately. So that's pretty trivial in this case. Else, what do you do? You say, okay, my frontier is going to be this FIFO queue with node as the only starting element, right? So you're starting like the node A or ARAD or whatever, right? So that's what you start, and your explored set is empty as you expect from the, as you saw from the previous pseudocode for the graph search, right? Okay, so now when you go through the loop, so you just go and test your frontier. If it's empty, well, there's nothing for me to do, really. I fail. Right, so I don't have any candidate for expansion, and I didn't find a solution, so I fail. Otherwise, what do you do? You just take the first element of the frontier. You just pop the frontier. So choose the shallowest node in frontier by virtue of the fact that you've implemented it as a FIFO queue. It's naturally going to be the shallowest node in the frontier. Right, by shallowest meaning the ones you've seen earlier, really. Right. So what do you do? So once you've done this, you say, okay. You say, okay, see, this is the bit that's a bit annoying. So this is the pseudocode. It says, add node state to explode. Whereas in the previous pseudocode, if you read in the text of Russell and Novick, it says the explode set contains the nodes and not the states. So they make it a bit annoying themselves by saying, you know, add node.state to explode. Well, but anyway, so as long as it's sort of clear, I mean, you're not going to be penalized if you sort of, at this point, make a bit of an overload between node and state, even though they make it clear that the node is not the state in the text as well. So anyway, so then what do you do for each action in problem action? So you take the particular state that you're at, right, so ARAD, and then you find out what are the possible things that I could do, drive to various towns, right? So you say, okay, each one of these, you're going to construct a child node for this, right? So you say, okay. So you say, okay, the first child node is going to be, okay, take the child node. Remember the child node function? Takes the problem, takes the node and the action, and it basically just sets up that node, right? So it puts all the various information and a pointer to its parent. So in this case, it would be a pointer to node, right? So, et cetera. And it checks. Now it does the check. So it constructs the node and it does the check. Now you say, if it's not explored or frontier, same as in the pseudocode, then basically let's test, right? Is it a goal, right? If it is, then I found a solution, right? If not, then it's going to say, okay, I need to insert the child in the frontier as a candidate for expansion next time round, right? Well, not immediate candidate, but something that I push at the back of the list. Okay? And then you keep going through this for each of the nodes, right? For each of the children that this particular node that you're looking at has. Any question? No? Does this make sense generally? No? You guys are amazing. I think it makes sense. I'm not quite sure, given that silence means assent, right? So you're all saying that it does make sense. All right. So if it all makes perfect sense, this means we can move on. No questions, right? Okay. So, what can we talk about? So, these are the properties in terms of the four dimensions. So, first question, is it complete? Well, yes, it is complete if B is finite, right? So, if you have finite branching, because it does it like that, it will eventually find a solution, right? So, it doesn't leave any part of the tree. It's the way it does it, level by level, right? So, if B is finite, so of course, you know, in practice, it could be that you have an infinite branching tree, right? It seems weird, but it is possible. So, what about the time? Well, the worst case scenario would be that you need to expand the first one, and then you need to expand the next, and you keep expanding. So at the first level, it's b, right? And then it's b squared, right? And then it's b cubed. So you just add all of these. So in the worst case, you may need to expand to the order of b to the d nodes, right? Yeah? But that's not only the only problem. The other problem is that the space itself really is going to be also to be of the same order, because you need to keep all the candidates that you haven't explored yet in memory, right? I mean, so basically, it's pretty bad. It's an exponential thing, right? So the space, you know, time is okay, but space is the bigger problem. So maybe you look at this and you think, wow, with my, I don't know, 8 gigabytes of RAM in my computer, it's no problem. But very quickly, this can be the order of terabyte or petabytes or whatever. So basically, your laptop or your little computer in your bedroom, you know, can, if it's a real world problem where you have loads, where you have like, you know, the branching is quite high, and the depth of the solution itself is quite, you know, it's quite deep, so you run out of memory very quickly, right? And is it optimal? Yes, if you assume that the cost is 1 per step, you will find what does it mean by optimal? Meaning, will you find the best solution first, right? Will you, are you guaranteed to find it? You will, because you're going layer by layer. You have to hit the one which is shallowest first, okay? And space, like I said, is the biggest problem for this, because that can become quite expensive. So if you read a bit more in Russell and Novi, you see some examples about how quickly this thing, you know, runs out, you know, how much memory you need for very simple problems. Okay? So if you're all happy with this, well, we can look at the other one that you all know, so depth first. So what does this one do? So this one is going to expand the deepest unexpanded node, right? And here again, so it's going to be, the strategy is going to be determined by the order in which you pick the candidate to expand. And this is done by just deciding how to implement the frontier. So in this case, it's implemented as a LIFO queue. So you put successes at the front. So this is also known as a
stack.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a stack, right? So stack means you push, and then you're going to pop your latest one always first, right? So this means the other one is implemented as a, so implementation of the frontier as a queue, you know, last in, first out, basically as a, you know, as a list where you take from the front, that gives you breadth first, but implementing it as a stack, you get depth first. Easy as this. So you can use the same code and just decide how to choose basically what the accessor, yeah?
For would it be easier to just change the current state instead of creating a new state every time?
What do you mean? For which one?
For the depth first search. But you know, instead of creating a new state every time, just changing that state and keeping some other variables which...
What does that mean, though? Keeping that state, because the state will change depending on the node you're looking at, right?
But instead of creating a new state, just changing the state in the way that the move or the action changes.
So you're saying instead of using a instead of using this? No, I'm not quite sure. Yeah.
Ah,
ooh, but how did you know where you are?
You keep some other variables.
But why, but right. Yeah, but keeping, isn't there any overhead in keeping extra information outside the algorithm? So maybe you're just, usually there's no free lunch, right? So that's the thing, you end up.
A very big state. I mean, if you need to keep a lot of variables, you don't change.
But you might end up in a repeated state.
How do you know, yeah. We'll see. Right, so okay, guys, depth first. So I know you're all bored with this because you've seen it before, but what can I do? Right, so here we are. So we have this particular node. So what do? We look at what's available for what are each child nodes. So we have B and C. So in this case, we push C. Well, we push B. Oh, yeah. So which one do we push first in this case? So we push B on, right? So this is going to be now the frontier. So we're going to pick B to choose, to do. So B is going to be the candidate. So you'll notice there that we're down this particular branch. So we're actually exploring this. So these two are in memory. So the interesting thing is, now we say, okay, we're going to do D. right? And D, we keep going, so this is now in memory, so we have not done this one in memory yet, so that we're there. If the solution, for instance, is around here, right, you keep going. So once you've done this, so if we assume our tree is only that deep, right, so once this is done, you can get rid of this. It doesn't need to be stored anymore, right? And once you do this one, it's not a solution. Actually, this is not in memory anymore, but you can also remove this one. You don't need to take care of this one. You can forget altogether about it because there's no solution about this. So now next you do E, right? When you do E, you do this, you do this, you do this. But immediately, once you're there and you haven't found a solution, this goes black. This one also goes black. So you can forget about all these as well. So as you can see, in terms of keeping in memory, it's going to be less than in for breadth first. So you can keep going like this, there, there. If the solution is there, then you're done, right? Are you happy with this? This is what you saw before, right? Okay. So what can we say about this? Well, is it complete? Well, no, it's not, right? So it fails in infinite depth spaces, right? Infinite depth spaces. So basically, for instance, spaces with loops, or you know, or you can say you could view these as different. You could view that one is just an infinite tree of some kind. You keep going, keep going. Another one is just a tree that looks finite, right? But it's just got a loop. It goes A, B, A. So then, you know, it's like you're going back to the top. So that's basically not a tree, it's a graph, right? So that's a bit of a problem. So that's why you modify to avoid repeated states along the path. So that's why then you need, even for this one, to have something where you would actually check whether you've seen something already so that you don't go down that road again, you don't try to do something you've done already. And this is actually interesting because, you know, if you're looking at various algorithms, and if you have to do like something to do with first order or resolution that you've seen before, these things happen all the time because you may derive a clause or something, some formula that you already have before, or something, or even more interesting, could be something which is an instance of something you've derived before. It doesn't need to be identical. So things get more interesting when you're looking at, say, theorem proving or trying to find a refutation, for instance, right? So if the space is finite itself, is that right? So complete in finite spaces? Well, yeah. It's not necessarily complete because you could have a loop. So if the depth, if it's finite depth, then it is complete. So have to be careful there. So what about the time? Well, the time is not very good, right? So because it's really going to be very bad if M, right, is much larger than D. What is M?
Maximum depth.
Yeah, and what is D? Exactly. If your solution is there, right, 10 branches down, and your depth is really it's really deep, you could go. You're going to explore all of this, whereas your solution is just up there, right? But you can't tell until you finish exploring all of this to go there. So that's a bit of an issue, right? So you may end up really exploring a bit of this completely, especially if you have a tree which is not really balanced, right? Imagine you have a tree which is like, you know, one branch is like, you know, 1 million deep. And the other one, the solution is at one. Bit of an issue, right? So that's a bit of a problem. So, but if the solutions are dense, then it's okay usually. If you have loads of solutions all over the place, it'd be much faster than breadth first, right? It may be, right? So what about space? Well, space is not a big issue because it's linear. You only keep what you're looking at in memory. So you keep basically the branch you're going down in memory, only these nodes you've seen so far. Right. So if you're not too convinced, you should have a read and then try and convince yourself it's b times m. Right? Is it optimal? It's not. Right? We just talked about this bit where you could go all the way down, the solution is all the way up there. So you actually could find a solution which is much deeper. Right? So when it comes to these algorithms, what you need to remember are these various properties, or at least be able to you know, it's more like remembering why they're like that. Right? And be able, you may be asked, for instance, to discuss the pros and cons of defining of choosing a particular algorithm for a particular problem. You're given a problem that hopefully you've never seen before, if it's in exam condition, but maybe you have, and you're asked, you know, what algorithm would you use and which one, or compare and contrast each algorithm for this particular problem, you know. So you need to try and discuss and see what's going on and say in terms, and usually if you're asked to compare and contrast, you should probably talk about it in terms, well, not probably, for sure, you should talk about it in terms of what's going on for these various measures, these various dimensions, for instance. And also, you know, in terms of the state space, right? So you can say, oh, in terms of the depth of the space, whether you know it's a finite tree or it's got loops or whatever, or whatever. But it still boils down to talking about it in terms of these. Okay? So these are the metrics that you use in terms to decide to compare these various algorithms. All right? So here's one. So compare breadth first and depth first search. When would breadth first be preferable? When would depth first be preferable? It's not really an exercise since you all of you, or quite a few of you maybe have the slides. So, well, so breadth-first is going to be important when completeness is important, because we know it's complete, and when optimal solutions are important, right? And depth-first, when solutions are dense and low cost, which I mentioned already, and also that's important, and especially the thing that's quite important is space costs, right? So if you've got some, so here's an example. If you've got an embedded system of some kind with very little memory, then, you know, and you need to do some search and some exploration problem of some kind, probably it may not be a good idea to implement breadth first, right? Maybe then it makes sense to implement something like depth first. So we all tend to think these days that memory and all these kind of things are not big issues, right? But, you know, there are many problems, there are many embedded systems where these things are still crucial. And you have your phones and things like that, right, for instance. So it's quite interesting to see what's happening. Any of you do any development for, say, Android or like Apple or anything like that? No? Oh. Nobody? None whatsoever? So, oh, you do? Have you done, what, Android? Oh, yeah. So there are issues, right, which is quite interesting to do with how you're going to implement many things because you have so much limited resources, right? So in terms of, you know, we tend to think, oh, if we're on a PC, we can do whatever we want. But when it comes to these operating systems and the hardware on which they're going to be deployed, actually it becomes quite interesting how you're going to implement your dictionary, for instance, if you're you're coming up with a word game of some kind, right? So how do you go about implementing the dictionary? Is going to be quite important. You know, what sort of data structure do you use for this? These kind of things are actually quite important. And what sort of search algorithm you might even use, right? So because there is a limit, it's more limited than, say, implementing it on your PC. So, you know, all this seems, when we look at all this, we think, oh, it's no big deal, but it actually is a big deal if you want to become a developer for phones, for instance, right? Or if you're doing it as a hobby or whatever. And because otherwise people will write bad reviews. They'll say, oh, this is too slow, what's going on? I like this. Have you ever seen these reviews where if you go on Android, so one of my friends has a game called Wordoid on Android. So it's pretty nice, it's a free game, right? And then you have these people saying, you need to fix this. Why haven't you fixed this, right? This is not acceptable. It's a free game. And they're all very, very unhappy. And then they start giving really low rating and all these kind of things. And it's like, then it's like, you know, you have to do it. If you don't do it, you know, I won't be very happy. It's like, what? This is free. I'm releasing this for free. Why should I have a duty to fix everything you come up with? And if you're not happy, but anyway, so he tells us all these stories about how, you know, some people, he actually receives emails saying, you know, if you don't fix this bug by Monday, I'm going to leave a negative review. I'm not joking. It's actually true. I mean, it's incredible. And this is a free game. Imagine if you paid for it. Yeah. Anyway, so. Right. So anyway, let's move on. So let's look at something else. So we've looked at breadth first and depth first. So we're going to look at a version of depth first, which has a limit, which is going to try and deal with the fact that you don't want to be going down a branch forever, for instance. So this is depth first with search with a depth limit L, and knows that depth L have no successors. This is the assumption that is made. You're going to say, okay, if I reach node L, depth L, I'm going to assume that my tree stops here. I'm not going to go any further. I'm going to now move on. I'm just going to prune my tree at this point and move up. Because, and you know, it may look quite arbitrary, but actually this is quite efficient. And it happens a lot whenever there are these. So what I work with is interactive theorem provers. So you do a lot of, you're supposed to be doing mathematical proofs or formal verification of programs. And it's interactive. You work with a system. But you have tools which are automated that tries to help you. They try to help you in terms of finding a proof. But this is an interactive system, and you're not prepared to wait a long time. So what it does, a lot of the search mechanisms, a lot of the proof procedures that are implemented in terms of trying to solve something, a particular goal, are implemented using these kind of depth-limited search. So they go through depths, and then they say, okay, you know, you can set it up as a user yourself. There's some default values so that you say, okay, if it's reached depth 20 and it's been doing it for 2 seconds or 3 seconds, I'm not prepared to wait any longer. I'm going to try and solve it myself. So you can see it very often saying, okay, depth, 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 and then say, okay, giving up at a particular depth. Because, you know, it's assuming that as a user, maybe you're not prepared to wait for much longer than, you know, anything that goes to depth 20, for instance, right? But there are things which are smarter that can be done with this, depending on the actual problem. So how is this implemented, right? So what we're going to have is that some problem with a limit that we're going to give to it, and it's going to return a solution or failure, or it's going to say I've reached the cutoff, right? So you need to be able to distinguish between these two, because exactly for what I said, if it's a cutoff, because then you can decide, okay, maybe I need to increase the limit, right? Because if I just get failure, I can't tell necessarily whether there is a solution or not, right? Whether I failed to find a solution or I reached a cutoff. And it's just going to be in terms of this recursive version here, where you make a node of the initial state, right, of the problem, right? You give it the problem and the limit. So what does this do? Well, first thing as usual is to test whether you've reached a gold state. And if it is, you just finish there. Else you say, okay, if the limit is zero, right, so it's going to be decrementing this limit. So if you've reached a limit of zero, so this means you've returned, you found a cutoff. So you say, okay, cutoff. Right, so I've stopped because of the cutoff. Else, you're going to just go through this. You're going to say, okay, it's recursive. So you say, okay, has the cutoff happened? No, it hasn't yet. So for each action in the problem, so again as before, so you have your node there, for each action that are available from a particular state, let's just build a child node and call this thing recursively. So you build a child node there, right? And then you just say, okay, let's call the algorithm this bit there recursively with a child node, the same problem, and decrement the limit by one, because I'm one down, so I need to go, the limit, the depth to which I want to go to is one less, right? And you see whether it finds a result doing this for that particular branch, right? If the result is the cutoff, you say, yes, the cutoff occurred, right? Remember, so there's a loop there, right? So you're going to try this for each one of them. And if it's not, if the result is not failure, then return the result. Right, so you keep going through this for all the children. You're going to check whether, so the loop is there, right? So the loop is there. For each of them, you're going to check either you've reached the cutoff or you failed. Or you found a result, right? Else, once you've gone there, when you reach this bit there, you've gone through this and nothing's happened, you check, okay, if, you know, I'm at this point, it's because the cutoff occurred, right? Then this means, you know, I returned the cutoff. I couldn't find a solution. Else, I'm going to say that I failed. So I never reached the cutoff, but I failed, right? So I couldn't find a solution. Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I couldn't reach the cutoff because the tree is smaller than the cutoff, basically. I'm trying to figure that out. So I exhausted the whole tree and I didn't find a solution. That's why I need to return failure. Any questions? No? Okay. So another algorithm for you to know. Just increasing. So what? Once we've got this, what can we do? We actually go about and implement something which is interesting. Oh, yes, I should ask a question. So is this complete? Why isn't it complete?
Because it cuts off
somewhere. Yeah, because the cutoff could be too? Too small. Because you could decide, I put my cutoff at zero. I never do anything, so I always return the cutoff. So that's one problem. So how do you figure out what the cutoff should be, right? And that depends very often, like I said, so depending on the domain you may be looking at, the experience that you know. So if you're looking at a particular problem and you know that the solution is going to be at most at depth 20, right, or at depth 9 or whatever, then you can sort of heuristically set the cutoff. So, you know, this is a different type of uninformed search where the cutoff is going to maybe, the cutoff could be completely arbitrary. I just decide to make up a cutoff of completely arbitrary randomly, right, and go for it. But it could be, this is one of those where you could try and build some, in a simple way, some kind of heuristic knowledge about the domain, right? You're actually trying to tackle. You're trying to say, well, I'm looking at this map problem, and I know that the distance, I need to go from Arad to Bucharest. I know that at most I need, so the longest distance is, what is it? I think it's 9 towns I can go. The longest route I can take is 9 towns, right, to get to from Arad to Bucharest. I think it's 9, I can't remember. So then, might as well put my cutoff at 9, right? Why try to put 20? There's no point. Remember, it's a graph, right? So you could, right?
But isn't iterative deepening always better than that limited search?
Well, we haven't done iterative deepening yet. Yeah. Always better? Yeah, more or less. Well, depends what you mean by better, though. Mm-hmm. It does expand more nodes. But yeah, it's got better properties. So that's why we're going to look at iterative deepening a bit more. So iterative deepening is just a variation that's just going to do, okay, I'm just going to try one depth at a time and keep increasing until hopefully I can solve it. So what does it do? It says from depth 0 to infinity, just apply depth limited search for each of these depths one at a time and try and find a solution. And if the result is not a cutoff, then return the result. So, yes. So just to illustrate this using my tree, so iterative deepening. So if I decide, okay, I'm going, well, the first thing it does, so it's going to do to depth 0, so the limit is 0. So that's all it does. It's just a root node. Looks at it, done, right? Next step, so it didn't find a solution, right? So assume the solution is not there. The solution is further down in the tree. So then the next round, it goes again, right? Now it says, okay, I need to do iterative deep, I need to do this depth limited search to depth 1, right? So it does it to depth 1. It assumes the tree finishes there. So it explores this, and basically it does depth first to depth 1, right? One at a time, okay? Still in the solution, depth limited search, which is depth first to depth 2 now. So your tree is bigger now. So it starts again, does this, does that, does that, does that, moves to this one, does to this one, blah, blah, blah. So it assumes that's the full tree, and it just does it depth first to that depth. Yep?
Why do we have to do the first search? We already found the
lazy task.
What? We need to do the
to keep. We found the what, sorry?
There is not any
answer. Yeah, but we don't. So that's the thing. It's the way the algorithm is implemented. There's no way for you to tell from one to the other that it's not there, that you've already done this. So there are ways of doing this, which is known as this hybrid search. There are ways of doing this where you could just do breakfast and then do this iterative deepening. I know what you mean. It looks like you're doing redundant things, right? But you, yeah. So the way the iterative deepening is implemented is that it's just going to be this, where each call is independent of the other. That's the standard way it's implemented, where you say, okay, I'm just going to restart, and it looks. But there is a reason for this. So yeah, so it looks like you could say, well, I already know, but you don't, if you don't keep any of the information, this means you need to restart. What you're saying is that, why is, if you don't do it again, how is it different from, I don't know, bread first or something like that? Right? So that's it. So this one is just hoping for the best. But I know what you mean, because it looks like you're doing things over and over again. And you are, actually. Ah, yeah, you could, but then it starts getting very complicated, more complicated to analyze this thing, so, yeah. But, so, if you pass it some of the nodes, how does it know where this node you're talking about is without expanding the tree again to get there?
Maybe you can just not check for the goal states until the final depth, until you reach the final depth.
But what is the final depth?
So yep. You're not checking for goal state until you reach the depth of n.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, we can put some levels
in. Okay, so what do you do for until depth n? You just expand the whole tree.
Yeah, because you've already checked for all solutions up until depth n.
Have you?
Expanding the tree, you're not.
Well, haven't you?
Ah, you said in terms of the implementation of the algorithm. That's what you mean. No, so you would only save on testing for the goal.
Yeah, but that might be expensive.
Probably, yeah, it's going to be order of the number of maximum number of nodes you've seen. It probably doesn't make big difference in the big scheme of things. That's the thing. But I see what you mean. That's an optimization in the implementation of it. There's no need to test. Yeah, you keep some pointer to what depth you were before. Well, you know, up to depth 2, it's not there, right? So yeah, that's a possibility. You don't test for the goal there because it's stupid not to. It would be stupid to do that. You know, it's not there. But how much do you gain? One operation per per node, I guess. Yeah, you can always. So these are actually, that's quite interesting because these are things that you might do in terms of optimization for your algorithm. But maybe you would gain something if it's a massive, massive, massive tree. I don't know. But given that, but yeah, it's one right now. So and you keep going depth free, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, you restart and you keep going. That's the tree deepening at depth free. And it's just depth first search, assuming the tree ends there. And if the node is actually, the goal is actually there, you will find it. Okay? Wow. So what can we say about iterative deepening search? So the number of nodes generated in an iterative deepening search to depth D with branching factor B is this. Why? Can you tell me why it looks like this formula? Any idea? Yeah, but I want something a bit more than this. Why is it d times b and then d minus 1 times b squared up to 1 times bd?
Because that's how many times you expand the first node.
Exactly. And the deepest one you only expand once. So if you understand this, the formula is really trivial. So the first node you expand, the first branch you do d times because you need to restart. And each one you do one less. And it's really easy to remember this formula. I mean, it's really easy to rewrite this formula without memorizing it if you understand this. It's really not that complicated. So this is saying, whatever is at depth D, I will only expand once, right? Because I'm stopping there. And the one before it, I expand twice, because I had to do it twice, and et cetera, et cetera. Up to the one at the top where I did D times. Yeah, very good. So this is the thing we also told you, somebody mentioned, I think it was you. So, well, you. Or you said it's the same, it's always better. Well, there is some cost associated with generating the upper levels multiple times, right? So we can do a quick comparison, for instance, with this versus breadth first. So if B is 10 and D is 5, you know, this is the number of nodes that you would generate with breadth first according to the formula that we had before, right? I mean, this is just made up, right? You know, it doesn't, there's nothing special with 10 and 5 there. And this would be the number of nodes for iterative deepening search. And basically, you have an overhead of about 11%. Which, you know, you would have thought would be much higher than this, given that you seem to be redoing the thing over and over again. But it's not, because expanding the ones at the top are always less. It gets bigger and bigger as you go to the bottom anyway. So in terms of the overhead, it's not that much, 11%. And for this, by doing this, you get some advantages, right? So it's complete, right? Well, breakfast is complete. The time complexity is going to be the same as what we talk about, the number of nodes that you need to do, right? So it's O to the BD. But there's a definite advantage of a breadth first, right? The space complexity is only O B times D, right? So depending on where this solution is going to be. Yeah? So it's very similar to breadth first. Except for breadth first, what did you have here?
B2.
No, not breadth first, depth first. What did you have for depth first there? M, right? Here your D is your M at any point, right? And is it optimal? Yes, it will find the optimal solution. Any questions about this? No? Yeah?
Did you explain how you come across the formula again?
This one?
The time formula.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody else wants to explain? No, okay. Well, it'll take too long. So the idea is, right, so remember, this is the iterative deepening, right? So if you're going to depth one, you expand this once, right? You expand this. If you're doing it to depth two, you need to do this again, right? So basically, you end up redoing what you did the first time round, because you need to expand the top node there, right? And then expand one level down, right? And if you keep doing, if you need to go to depth two, you end up doing depth, what you did for depth zero, for depth one, and now again, and then depth two. So the idea is that, right, when you've reached, this is the, for instance, like if your depth is going to be three, right, the lowest one when you're doing to this depth, you only expand this one once, right, this level once, right, to this level there, all the way at the bottom there. Whereas this one, you already did it before and you did it again for this to go to depth three. Right, so I don't know if this makes sense. So how many times did I expand to depth D? Only once, right? But to depth D minus one, because each time I'm iterating, I'm restarting the algorithm, the depth limited search, I did it twice, right? So I did it once the time before and then the next time. Does it make sense a little bit? So the first root one, the other way to look at it is that each time you restart the algorithm, you have to do the beginning, so the first two branches. So you do it D times, right? So in this case, to do to depth three, do it once, twice, three, actually, is it four times? Four? Well, no, you don't do it yet here. B is not done here. It's just the root. So you do B. So you do two, then it's four, then it's eight, two to the three. Right? Is that right? Yeah. No, not two to the three. Three times. What am I talking about? No, it's D three times times B six times. Why is it six times? It is six times, two times three. Oh, it's the number of nodes, because it's the number of nodes, yeah. See? It's easy not to see it anymore, so do make sure that you understand. So it's the number of nodes that you've expanded. It is six, because there are two each time. Two times two times, two plus two plus two. Right, or two times two times three. Okay. Yeah, so is it optimal? Yes, it is optimal because of the way it builds the tree, right? It will find the cheapest solution. Okay. Now, next. So here's a summary of the algorithm. So we didn't look at this, and actually, this formula is no longer correct for this one, for the new algorithm that they give in Russell and Norvig. So I didn't go for this, but you should read about it, right? just so that you have a good knowledge of the, what it all means, right? And don't, I'm going to update the slide and change this table because this is no longer correct. But anyway, so we looked at this and this. No, yeah, and we looked at these four. So here's a comparison of all the various bits and pieces. So like I said, if you're asked to compare these algorithms on a particular problem, what you need to do is to compare them along these four dimensions that we had: completeness, time, space, and optimality, right? And this is what you're trying to do. And based on the problem, you try to say, okay, this problem actually is one where, you know, we have loops, or where we have an infinite, you know, an infinite tree or an infinite depth search space or state space. So then what will happen when I try to use each of the algorithm according to these things? Right? That's all. This is the compare and contrast. Don't try to come up with some fancy way of comparing them. Just use these four things to compare, if you're asked to compare these various algorithms. That's all you need to do. Right? And of course, knowledge of the problem. Don't worry, you're not going to be